son, you're gonna drive me to drinking if you don't stop driving that
natural burning, burning car.
Come in, it's your car, and you do what you want with it.
I own this car, I do as I please. I also own the highway, my taxes pay for that. They're both mine. I own the highway and I own the car. I own everything!
Big trouble. That's the rookie Suarez up and over Regan Smith. The big one out there to the trial.
Welcome to the Throwing Wrenches Podcast.
Hey, everybody, this is Eric Stahl.
And I'm Daryl Scott, and you're listening to Throwing Wrenches, the podcast. This is episode 3, am I right, Eric?
Episode 3, I kind of like to think of this as a Polaris slingshot of episodes for us.
It's the three-wheeler?
It is a three-wheeler. I was going to go Reliant Robin, but I wanted to go modern, and plus I see these things driving down Route 29 all the time.
They are definitely the hot setup. If you have a Polaris slingshot or some other three-wheel vehicle that is relatively unsafe at any speed, let us know what you think of it. Let us know what you think of this program. Thanks for listening, and thanks for all your feedback so far. As we've like to remind everybody, the theme for the show is Kaizen, which is the Japanese word for constant improvement.
And still working on the catchphrase. So have you come up with a catchphrase this week, Daryl?
No, I'm still – it's in beta.
Okay. All right.
I'm not really ready to release it yet.
Right. Maybe we can share some ideas through a Google Doc or something like that.
Yeah, we'll do a firmware. We'll push a firmware.
Maybe we can do a poll on the Facebook page.
I think that's good. We'll get a little traction there. And I will freely admit the Facebook page has been – I haven't posted much
We did so. Two videos. I think between now and in the past episode, two videos, one from you and one from me. That's pretty strong work.
I mean, maybe next month we can eke out a third. I don't know. I took some videos of Cars and Coffee at Northwoods Mall earlier this month.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because I was going to ask how it was.
Great time as always. The turnout was bigger in July, I think. I think it was a little warm maybe in August, so folks were...
It was plenty hot this weekend.
Yeah. Would have been a good day for a pool, unfortunately, you know.
Any cool things like the Greyhound bus show up or anything like that?
One of the cooler things I thought this month was like a little circle track racer, like a modified or late model with some crazy motor in it. I got a video of that. I'll throw it up there.
Okay.
Fantastic. Whatever the thing had in it, it was pretty cool. But yeah, you just drove it off a trailer and drove around the lot like it was nothing. Definitely made a lot of noise. Everybody turned their heads. Of course, the Everest Trucks folks were out there in full effect. The BMW folks, a lot of nice...
All the sponsors.
Yep, all the sponsors, a lot of newer cars.
I think Lexus is also a sponsor, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some good stuff. And, you know, some oldies in there, too. I think there was also a 66, 65 or 6 Dodge Coronet four-door sedan that was kind of like, looked like either a work in progress or a young guy's first old car.
Okay.
I really enjoyed that because it reminded me of high school where, you know, you just kind of get some seat covers, throw it on, air up the tires, and put $20 in the tank and just let it rip. Doesn't matter. So, yeah, a lot of nice cars there.
So what made you focus on the green Mini?
I love that. First of all, I love Minis, new and old, but I can't fit in any of them.
Well, that's what I was wondering. Why would you be allured to the Mini?
There's something about them. I just always thought they were kind of neat. And then that one locally that we took the video of, that's got a real nice Honda. I think it's a B18 or some sort of a Honda motor swap in it it's got some real custom pieces in it. Roll bar sounds great, and it's a real eye-catching green.
It's a great looking car. He's obviously put a lot of work into it.
Yeah. I just think it would be a lot of fun. I know you can hop them up, you know, the Mini Coopers from back in the day. You can do quite a bit with them, but you throw a little Honda motor in there that just ramps up to 9,000.
Is there a purist thing on that? Because I know when I deal with people who modify, like, you know, Land Cruiser, stuff like that, and they drop a Chevy small block in there, people scream. And it does deplete the value of the car, too, when they do that.
If you're taking something on a track, though, if you're going to do a little SCCA racing or go up to Road America and just give it hell.
That'd probably be the only way to do it, wouldn't it?
Yeah. And especially with the older European stuff, now that I'm finally in that, you know, I've dabbled in that for 3 months of hell, just trying to find parts.
Give away the story yet, Derek.
I won't. But just trying to find parts, you know, be a lot easier to go down there and
absolutely
say, I need a set of plugs for a 93 Civic with SI with this motor in it.
No doubt.
Yeah. You know, probably a little easier to work on.
One thing, I don't know if you saw, I went down to the Pekin Cruise Inn 2 weekends ago.
That's right.
Yeah, and I saw that Corvair Spider. Have you seen that car before?
The Woody.
Yes.
The one with the wood on the side? Yes.
God, I love that car. I don't know what it was. A girl that I got rejected at the seventh grade dance, her parents had a blue Corvair, and I'll never forget her, Jackie. You shit. Sorry. Scrub that. I don't know.
We'll clean it up in post.
Maybe not. But anyway, it was always something about a Corvair that I always felt, you know, rejected by. But that, yeah. I've never seen a Woody one like that. And the wire mesh over the headlights and just, that was a unique car.
It's kind of like a Herbie Goes Bananas era.
So that's a legit tribute. Factory edition or what?
The Woody side thing is not.
Okay.
But it oddly enough, it suits the car.
It looks good.
They didn't do a Woody on that, but then years later when the Chevette came out, the first year of 76, you could get a Chevette Woody.
I remember that, yeah.
Which was kind of goofy. But,
or a vinyl, as it should have been called.
Just peel and stick. Yeah. But yeah, that Corvair, that's made the rounds a few times. I saw that at a few shows.
I took a couple pictures of it because I was really enamored by the thing. I thought it was a great-looking car.
I mean, if you're the type of person that just wants to cruise around town, get groceries, and have everyone go like, it's that guy. That's the car for you. That's the car for you, Eric.
So, awesome.
If anyone's got any Christmas gift ideas, Eric's got one.
Yeah, a Corvair Spider with applique wood walls. I'll be all about it.
Love it.
All right. So I was looking for feedback this week, and we still haven't gotten much. And that's fine because I know we don't have that many listeners yet. This is only episode 3. But we did get one review or one piece of feedback on the regular webpage, throwinwrenches.com. And they said, we know what we're talking about. I don't know where they're from. The name made me think they were from Asia somewhere, but it could have been spam, but it didn't look like spam. So I'm going to call that a legitimate comment from a listener.
It's because do they use the hashtag Kaizen in that? Or?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe. I didn't hashtag Kaizen, but I should probably do that.
We should start doing that.
Yeah. And speaking of reviews, we still have no reviews in iTunes yet. And I know that your wife is listening, so she's probably got an iTunes account. And,
yeah.
Let's start soliciting those things. Maybe we can give away a free... can of beer or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I got a couple hubcaps in the garage I cleaned up. I didn't even realize I had them.
I got a Toyota hood ornament. I can, a chrome. That'd be nice. Somebody wants that, right?
Off of like a Cressida or something?
No, nothing old. No, it's not metal. It's plastic. Come on.
Oh, well. Yeah. That'll be a new thing. We'll have, leave us a review, give us some feedback. We'll put up some stuff on Facebook.
Or we'll send you an autographed picture.
No takers on that.
All right, and we're still looking for sponsors. Operators have been standing by for the last 2 weeks looking for for somebody to reach out. Our rates are still cheap. We're not lowering them yet. We're waiting a couple more weeks before we...
We still got pride.
Yeah, a little bit.
We don't have much, but we have our pride. just throwing some ideas out there. We would love some sponsorships from, say a detailing company.
Oh, detailing.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
Because, Eric, you wash your vehicles once a year or two, right?
Well, I have staff for that, but yeah.
Oh. You've got people for that. My guy will do it.
Yeah, I got a guy.
Tire repair. Eric's been known, and I've been known to require some tire repairs
on the
road from time to time.
Invaluable.
So, hey, if Bridgestone Firestone wants to throw us a couple thousand, that'd be
great. Yeah, or Hoosiers. When I'm out autocrossing next time, I'll rep the Hoosiers.
Perfect. Yeah. And then the Fuzzy Dice Company. We would love... I'm just kidding.
Is there a tassel company? Because I would do tassels around the... Especially in one of your old rigs. I think that'd look great.
Yeah, go for that...
like a Surrey with a fringe on top type thing.
Love it. Now I'm going to be looking for... They actually made a Jeep Surrey in the 60s.
Did they?
Yeah, they did.
Well, I think I remember. It was like a...
Candy striped top.
Yes. That was a cool rig.
Look for one of those.
All right. So what is going on with the Volvo brakes? Because I thought this project should have been done the first time we talked about it.
Yeah, it should have been. I actually am about 80% of the way there. I had another roadblock last week where I had to buy some UNF brake fittings, female UNF 3/16ths.
They didn't look unique. Well, you showed me one of those, and I just thought this looks like a little brass fitting.
It looks like a little acorn thing that sits on the brake hose, fits on the brake hose over the axle and the rear.
And it's a small. By the way, that is a really small line too.
Yeah. It's 3/16, which is pretty standard brake.
Didn't look that big. Okay.
Yeah. So, but they're hard to find. But Napa, if you the old commercial, the Napa know-how does exist. So,
do they have the know-how?
They do. They actually have it. I think on a can and a towel you can buy a shop towel. An embroidered shop towel. That would be $50. But if you do need brake fittings, I'm not shilling for a sponsor, but I will say Napa, of all the, O'Reilly, AutoZone, all those guys. And they have your common stuff. So if you got, a 2005 F-150, they're going to take care of you.
Yeah.
But if you have weird or older stuff.
And the year of this car, it's a...
It's a 69. It's a 69 144S.
Okay, for those just joining us for the first time.
Yep. With Girling calipers, four-wheel disc, dual reservoir master, you know, like all the modern safety. It's actually got four-piston calipers in the front, which, you know, my Mustang Cobra had, which I thought was, you know.
Yes, our modern trucks have those, and they're a nightmare. You know, if you want to find a caliper, it's going to seize up. Usually the more pistons, the more odds.
Right. Whereas like my Jeep, I think it's got one. Yeah. It's just one big one. It's like, it works. It's fine. But yeah, so that's going okay. And then I've got a 94 Suburban that's kind of our lumber store hauler, a Home Depot runner kind of. And that is starting to leak antifreeze from – originally it was just the side tank, so I just top it off every once in a while. It'll be okay.
You're that guy, huh?
I'm that guy.
Do you park it in the street when it gets too bad, or do you still –
You know, I did today. I took it to work because I didn't want to get up early and put gas in the other car. So I'm like, that's still got some gas in it. I'll take that.
It's still got some antifreeze too, right?
Yeah. I'm actually in the summer right now this year, and if the EPA is listening, folks, I am not living that close to a watershed to cause a problem. But I've been putting water just straight
from what I've read, all of Peoria's watershed, and they're taxing you for that.
I just got a slip in the mail, actually.
Yeah. It was nice of them.
Yeah, that's based on your driveway and roof square footage.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
There's a math formula there. So now I need a radiator, and then I think a freeze plug is starting to
lucky boy
starting to go. So might be talking about that later, or just phone a junkyard and have it take it away. We'll see.
You know, I think you made mention that maybe some people have mocked you for having such a big vehicle. In this day and age, you know, when people want economical vehicles, I mean, why would you want to have that car, Daryl?
Well, because I can fit 20 sheets of plywood in it, and I can hook a, you know, if I need to aerate my lawn, I can go rent one and hook it to the car and get going. I always like being self-sufficient. I don't ever want to be that guy who's like, hey, man, can I borrow your truck? I got to move some stuff. It's like, no, I don't loan my stuff out. If you need me to help you, I'll do it. But I'm not just giving you the keys to this thing that you're going to make fun of for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just some people pull horse trailers. Some people have, you know, a big family and they got to have a big vehicle like an Excursion. Mm-hmm. I know it might seem like a foreign concept to a lot of people, especially in this day and age where we're getting into like the micro machines.
Yes.
And that's fine. You know, if you want to drive a something small and go to work in a little, you know, Ford EcoSport, go for it. I'm just saying, for some folks who actually do work for a living, might not always be the best idea. So that's why I have a giant Suburban that should be a cash for clunkered years ago.
Well, in news later on, it'll be good news to you to know that Donald Trump is working in your favor for vehicles like yours. So
the 8 mile per gallon demographic.
Yeah. Maybe there'll be more of those on the road here in the next couple of years. Lucky guy.
No projects for you, Eric. I mean, you're pretty much tree huggers back to work.
Just tree huggers back to work. The daughter's just back from all of her summer vacations, so Red Mist will get back out on the road. Autocross in September, and probably hit that. So I'll have to do some fine-tuning on that. I found an old Corolla we traded for that's 200-and-some-thousand miles, 5-speed, needs struts.
Hmm.
And I tried to parlay that into a quick conversation with a wife for $1,000 to buy that, and that's not going down as well as I hope.
Not happening.
So that might be a project coming up. We'll see. I don't know.
It's a Corolla S2, right?
Yes. And sometimes those cars can just sit at the dealership for months and months on end and until they maybe are needed because another car breaks down. I'm just saying that it may be there when we need it.
Yeah. Years ago, I had a friend of mine who did buy a Corolla with, I think it was like $250,000. It was a guy's company car.
Yeah.
And just tons of highway miles. And the mileage scared him off, but the thing was clean as a whistle.
Mm-hmm.
And it ran like a top. And instead, he bought a, I can't even remember, it was like a Taurus or something. And
I've read of that one probably.
Yeah, it didn't last as long. Corolla probably still running.
See, the Corolla, the guy traded in, I guarantee because the one strut blew out and it was making a hell of a racket on that front end, he probably thought it was something horrible.
Yeah.
And it's not great, but it was literally metal on metal on the passenger front. Oh, yeah, just completely blown out. So I'm going to put coilovers on it anyway, so what do I care?
There you go.
Yeah, so I'm just saying, if we need a car, I found a car, honey. Anyway.
I wish you luck. Good luck with that.
All right, so, I did want to bring this up. Because life in the service lane, for those who don't know, I run a service department at a local dealership here in the Peoria metro area. I had to let a guy go today. I don't like doing it. My shop is only about 11 technicians or 13 technicians generally on average. and found out that one of my guys, from a customer who left my dealership and went to Costco to get a tire repair, found out that one of my guys had just done a plug repair on a tire after he was ordered to put a patch plug, which is one where you dismount the tire and then push it from the inside out.
Okay.
He didn't do that. And what happened was the customer went to Costco because there was still another nail in there. Had the technician done the job right, he would have saw there was another nail piercing through there. So I look like the schmuck. And then once I talked to some of my other employees about it, they say, oh, well, he did that like 2 weeks ago, too. And I'm like, oh, all right, well, now we're defrauding, so, and you're not doing as you've been ordered to do. So,
well, I didn't know this, that there's actually, is it a, like a DOT thing?
As yes, far as Department of Transportation says you should not do just push plugs for highway vehicles, especially okay. for steel-belted radials. It'll get the job done. And I have one of those kits in my truck now if I get on the trail and I have a problem.
Sure.
I do them in my lawnmower all the time for thorns. And but no, on a car that with a rated tire for 120 miles an hour, 130 miles an hour, a push plug repair is not adequate, especially if you're doing turns or you have low tread. The tires will scrub that and pull it out, whereas an inside patch plug will actually stay in place.
Okay.
And there's standards on that. It can't be too close to the edge for that same reason. You don't want to scrub and pull out. So.
Yeah, I always hear people, too, you know, I got a patch and they couldn't, or I was trying to get my tire patched and they said they couldn't do it. It was too close to the sidewall. That's bogus.
Oh.
And I'm like, no, there's actually some physics involved. When you load that sidewall.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. Let me put 50 psi in your LT tire, and then have you do you know, doing 80 miles an hour down the road. You know, give me a break, folks. You know, if I could do it, I would, because I honestly love giving people good news.
Sure,
I get no joy out of walking in there and say, "Hey, by the way, I know you've had this car 6 months. You need a $300 tire." Nobody likes that news, and I don't like giving it, but that's just sometimes what happens.
Yeah, it is what it is, and unfortunately. As we saw years and years ago, you old timers will remember this, like the old Ford and Firestone tire debacle with
rollovers,
some tire defects or underinflation, and you know, just, I mean, tires are important to the overall handling and safety of the vehicle, especially if you're going to have, you know, your family in there, you're going to have, you know, people you care about.
That goes without saying. Yeah. And your ABS, your vehicle skid control, your traction control, all these things don't work if your tires suck.
Yep.
So that's like the one thing you can control to make your car operate properly. So anyway, we'll get off that subject. That was my exciting project for the week.
Well,
all right.
Yeah.
So I wish him luck. Hopefully he learned something from it, and hopefully he does a better job somewhere else.
Definitely.
All right. So let's move on to the news.
We're going across the ocean.
Yeah, we're going to talk international news here real quick.
No, that's Britain.
Well, yeah.
That's my only travel reference is going the other way.
Oh, Canada. But that's not really going across the seas. So anyway.
That's, yeah.
Anyway, the last time we did a show, we talked about Sergio Marchionne being very ill and handing off the keys to the Fiat Chrysler off to the head of Jeep, which we didn't say his name. I feel kind of bad. And again, tonight, I won't say his name because I don't know who he is. But anyway.
It's okay. You can Google him.
Yeah, I think Sergio was literally on his last breaths when we must record that, because the next morning woke up and I just released the show and he'd passed away, so yeah. I felt really bad about that. I mean, it is what it is, but I've read some stuff
66,
on him.
66, was it?
Something like that. So he'd had a surgery. I think it was a hip or shoulder surgery, something like that.
Shoulder, yeah.
And, man, I mean, that's a bad way to go. You go in to get fixed up and then, an infection or something like that? They just got to keep battling it. And
yeah, they were pretty vague about it. They just kept saying, you know, complications due to surgery or after surgery, which, you know, in this day and age, you don't think that should be a thing. But
you would not. No, absolutely. But when you're aged and you're getting surgery done, you got to think about that stuff. The one thing I did read up on Sergio and I thought was interesting, you know, the guy came from an accounting department. He wasn't really a car guy. He worked his butt off and he was known for putting in long hours. And the other thing he was known for was just dragging people up with him who maybe weren't necessarily your traditional car people. And he had a very loyal following because of that, because he saw through, you know, the traditional stereotypes and, you know, of who should be there and who shouldn't. And he brought up people he thought could do the job. So, interesting guy. So, it'll be interesting to see what happens at Fiat Chrysler from here on out. I'm sure they'll be okay for a couple of years, but...
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
It is. It does make a difference, though, especially when it's unexpected like this.
Yeah. I mean, imagine if you're a shareholder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a
major shareholder, you know, and you have a vested interest in the company. It's definitely something you look at.
I wonder if Lee Iacocca still has a bunch of shares.
Is he still around?
Dude's still around.
Well, yeah. I guarantee he's got some shares.
Yeah, I would hope so. He's another one that brought things back from the brink.
K-Car, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was the guy. You get more cars on the trailer.
I liked when he did the commercials for Chrysler like 15 years ago.
He did come back, didn't he? I thought you were talking about the really, really old ones where he was frank with the American public saying, you know, here's what, it was like the Schooner Tuna moment of Chrysler.
Nice reference, because that's exactly, perfect era, perfect everything.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it was. I remember we talked, I think, a week or so ago about Chevy Astros. I don't know if that was on the show or off
I don't think, I think it was off the show.
Okay, well, we'll come back to that in a later show. Right.
Yeah, we got
tune in Vanners. But I remember reading a National Geographic when I was a kid, because I used to clip out my mom's like car ads for like mm-hmm. you know, Mustangs and cool stuff. And there was an ad with Lee Iacocca, and it was for the Voyager,
okay,
or Caravan, one of the two, the minivan. And it was when the Astro came out in '85, and it was a pullout. And it says, even when we showed them how to build a minivan, they didn't get it right. And then it's this like threefold you pull out, and it's a comparison of like, our Chrysler minivans are way better, and here's why. And it was, and Lee Iacocca's face was in every picture. It was awesome. It's just like this big middle finger.
Well, it really was a unique vehicle versus the Astro van was basically, we're going to take our van platform and cutesy it up, put some softer rounded edges on it.
Yeah.
And but it was still a Chevy van. I mean, it was,
sure,
you know, on a frame. Mm-hmm. I imagine those first Chrysler vans were on frames too, but they really looked more unibody, and they became more of that.
Yeah, I think they were unibody. And actually, the Astro was a subframe. I found out years later.
So it was like a partial, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The rear end had like a little frame back there. Yeah.
Little mini thing. And then the front was actually a modified second-gen F-body Camaro Firebird subframe.
We'll have to do an episode on our Astro adventures. Maybe that'll be like a Christmas episode. It'll be a Christmas bonus. Get the toddies out and we'll
love it.
Because I can tell some sliding to save my life. Astro story. So
I'm glad we're here. I'm glad we made it through that time in our lives.
I'm going to let you take this one because I was surprised by the information you drug up on
Malaysia. Yeah. Well, you highlighted this one. Malaysia is apparently toying with the notion of banning all automobile imports.
Yeah, I don't know much about the prime minister there, but he made some flippant statements. And, you know, at first I'm like, well, what's Malaysia do? I'm thinking, they got a Tata motor factory there or something like that.
They actually, I had to look this up. They are actually the number three auto producer in Southeast Asia, so
that's,
it's behind,
crazy.
You know, the other big dogs like Japan and
South Korea.
Yeah. So, which will actually lead into our next topic. But yeah, Malaysia, I think they said they have 27 automakers in that country. Which
I would have never guessed. At first, we were trying to figure out where Malaysia is on the map.
Yeah, my skills are not so good there. I'm sorry. Yeah,
I thought it was that little pointy thing on the risk board that says Siam. Yeah. But no, it's the Turkey one below it on the risk board. I don't know what that's called there.
Malaysia is above Singapore, I think we discovered, right?
I think.
I don't know.
Towers are there. That's all I know. And it's we're really slighting this country. They obviously do great work down there, and we're not trying to sound like typical Midwestern yokels here. Sorry.
Well, it's about STEM. It's about science, technology, something and something and math and words. I don't know.
Good job, Daryl.
Yeah. You
go. Well, you're... Never mind. We won't get into which public school that was. We won't let them take credit. All right. So also in the international news, the Genesis brand beats out Porsche as the most appealing automotive brand, according to J.D. Powers.
Mm.
And for those not familiar with Genesis, that is Hyundai's... flagship brand. It would be like the equivalent of Lexus or Infiniti or Acura.
When did they just become Genesis?
I don't know. Well, they had the Hyundai Genesis.
Yeah, but it's like when, you know, Infiniti came out, you know, and all that. It's like everyone thought it was this new car company. It's like, really, it's just a Camry with leather.
It's just a Maxima. It's a fancy Maxima, or it's a fancy whatever their big SUV was, or, you know. I don't know. The Genesis thing, I think, is kind of funny because I think there's a certain expectation when you buy a Porsche and you expect excellence. I know this from working from a premier Japanese brand. Those customers are hard to please because they go in with higher expectations. And I wonder if the Genesis people are like, man, I didn't expect all of this. So, you know, I'm going to give them a good survey. I think it's... I would love to see what the response is for those same customers 5 years down the road.
Well, and surveys are, it depends on, who surveyed, the response rate. There's all kinds of marketing wizardry that goes into a survey result. And J.D. Power usually, it seems like they're the types that come back and, you know, oh, number one customer satisfaction is Comcast. It's like, no.
How is that possible, right?
There is no way on earth that that is possible.
Dude, there's surveys for everything. And I bang my head all the time. If I'm in the Taco Bell drive-thru, they're like, hey, fill out a survey and we get an iPad. And I'm like, who has time for these surveys? And first off, you know, you should know what I want by what I buy. They should have enough algorithms. They can see what is bought at the East Peoria Taco Bell and say, hey, today...
It's the five chalupa guy pulling up here.
And I don't know. The survey madness has gone nuts. We deal with a dealership. I'm waiting for my dentist now to start sending me surveys, you know, after I get my teeth cleaned. How did you feel? Did you feel like you were greeted promptly? How was the waiting room? For God's sakes.
How was your pina colada flavored fluoride treatment today?
Oh, I haven't had that.
No, it's delicious. You're not supposed to lick it, though. I will say this. Does anybody do anything with that survey data? You know, is the manufacturer is going to take all that, aggregate it, and then...
Well, they measure us with it, and I have to pistol whip my employees to make sure that they ask for the next appointment, because that's now the new buzz thing. So if you're at a dealership and they say, "Oh, can I schedule your next appointment for you?" and you look at them and you go, "Well, why would you do that? Because I don't know how many miles it's going to be, you know, or how many months it's going to be." Yeah. Well, because the manufacturer wants us to ask. I mean, that's where we're at now. We're being led by the nose by the manufacturers. Focus group somewhere, some college grad got together a focus group and said, "Well, you know, a lot of people like this. If we show some interest." So we're going to make every dealership 1,200 across the nation ask this stupid question.
Yeah. Well, at the end of the survey, though, the Genesis still beats the Porsche. And I'm saying Porsche because I'm fancy.
Well, because you want to pay more for service.
The most appealing automotive brand. I can't believe it's the same demographic walking in both
dealerships. No, it's not.
Showrooms. You know?
Well, it is a premier brand, Daryl, so I don't think you understand.
Look, honey, I saved $70,000. It's just as good. When is this warranty up?
And you got to go do... never mind.
We won't slander
any stores.
No, I'm sure they're great.
All right. So the next one, and I thought this one would be great for you and your big gas-guzzling SUV, Daryl.
Yeah.
Trump is talking about relaxing the standards on the CAFE standards for automotive manufacturers. And if you aren't familiar with this, we talked about this, I think, in the pilot episode of the show. We haven't really talked about it much. But if you don't know, manufacturers have to build a certain amount of fuel-efficient cars that balance out their gas pigs, and when they do that, they get some federal subsidies. So that's why you see the Nissan Leaf and the Titan, you know, and these different cars all over the place. And I think you brought up there was a Chevy, was a Ford?
Oh, like the EcoSport and stuff? Like, yeah, the real small, like 1 liter motor.
Yeah, a car that nobody would even care about. They'd probably sell just a handful of, but that balances out the portfolio for the manufacturer. So,
well, and it's also one of those things where they can... If anybody calls them on the carpet, you know, like, oh, you make this F-150, you know, dually diesel thing that's just this hideous, grotesque big thing that wastes fuel and all that. Or you can be like, but we also make this.
Yes.
That's, you know, there's something for everyone that's out there. But there's also ways that you can't tell me that there's tons of people lining up to buy a Chevy Spark. You can't.
They're not. No. I mean... They'll Prius people, they always buy another Prius because they're a Prius person. I don't know that Spark people have that kind of loyalty. There's probably somebody just trying to find a cheap car for their kid or something like that.
Yeah.
That's why they buy that thing.
Yeah.
Now, the one thing that was interesting about this, the car manufacturers are warning back to the Trump administration, which I find shocking, that this could stifle innovations in technology. And I'm like, since when do they care? Maybe they're thinking about the fact that they do have to sell these cars overseas, and even if the United States doesn't
global,
give it, they don't give a lick. At least, you know, France and England, they may care about this stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good point, because it's especially with Ford, we've seen Ford kind of adopt the whole global
truck initiative,
but just their lineup in general, I think. For the most part.
Well, I'm going back to the rip on them for saying they're going to dump their auto line in the United States.
Oh, yeah.
Still waiting to see if that pans out. We'll see what happens.
Was that this year?
Yeah.
That was weird.
Well, they're talking about all kinds of money they're going to be spending this year to retool the lineup. So,
yeah.
Who knows?
Whatevs. Bring back the Crown Victoria Ford. There, I'm going to start that hashtag campaign.
Bring back Crown Vic. All right. Yeah. Also in the international news, this is the last article we got here. Volkswagen bouncing back, record sales and larger profit margins for this quarter. And they went from 6.8, went to $3.85 billion It's a 3.4% increase in operating profit. I would have thought that Volkswagen would be like coughing up blood from getting just beat up over the last couple of years by the federal government.
Yeah, and like the governments of other countries all over the world where they decided they perpetrate their crime against humanity with cheating on the emission scandal.
Yes.
Which, by the way, did we forget that even happened? Is that like the Newhart dream? Like, oh, it was just all a dream. No, that actually happened.
The Newhart dream. I love it. Yeah. We woke up. Oh, that was just a dream.
No, I can still buy a diesel. No, you can't. You're not right now. And, you know, the other thing, I just want to throw this out there. And I love Volkswagens. My brother had, you know.
I'm a previous Volkswagen owner myself.
Love them. At some point, I would love to consider buying, you know, a little hot hatch or something like that. But the one detail that still sticks in my head with this whole the Dieselgate fiasco was they cleaned house. They were like, you know, they're bringing up this guy on charges, quote unquote, in Austria or wherever he's from. And then they did tests on human beings.
What?
Human beings. You can look that up. That was a big thing like a year ago. They actually like had – and these people signed up for it, by the way. But they put these motors up on test stands and ran these diesel motors at, you know, highway operating RPMs for hours, and they put these people in a room and they just sit and breathe the exhaust.
Oh my God!
And they'd measure like their oxygen level in their blood and stuff. They just, you know, we're good. But yeah, just think about that.
Well, the Germans have some great standards for testing, don't they?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe OSHA doesn't exist over there. But I just, you know, for the record, I'm happy Volkswagen's doing well. They're a huge company. They've got their hands on a lot of brands across the world. And they do good things. I mean, their stuff actually, you know, their products are pretty good. But I just, if any other company went and did that, I don't know.
They made Akio Toyota cry in front of Congress, you know, with a problem that was still questionable that it actually existed.
The quote-unquote unintended acceleration?
Yeah, yes, exactly.
Yeah, I remember that whole joke.
All right, so that's it for international news, and we move on to national news. Now, I read a trade publication called Automotive News. It's an industry publication that's sent out to the dealerships once a week. And one of the guys in there that does a byline is Keith Crane. And I've read Keith Crane for 25 years, and his headline this time was it, and this is quote unquote from Keith Crane, "It is painfully obvious that we and the U.S. government should not continue to allow car companies to use our streets and highways as if they are the private proving grounds intended solely for their use."
Well, what do you think about that?
I have mixed feelings, but you seem to have a little stronger stance on it.
Well, I can say I agree with him. I think it's pretty frightening. I'm a realist. I know that it's probably 10, 15, 20 years from now, we're going to be in some Jetsons bubble car, you know, like the Wall-E people. We're not going to have much control over the rest of our lives. I get that. That's why I'm buying garbage now, so, trying to fix it up so I can run around and cool old garbage for about 5 years, tops.
Well, they'll tax you out of it. Don't worry.
I know. But I think a lot of this has to do with its origins is, of course, in things like the tech bubble, Silicon Valley, you know, like there's the tech is woven into our lives right now, and it's growing. I mean, I was at Lowe's the other day and I saw a fridge that has like a touchscreen Wi-Fi enabled dealio on the front panel, so
where it tells you what to order because your milk is low or something like that.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, wow, that's cool. What in the heck are we doing with this? Like, shouldn't a fridge just keep stuff cold instead of like tell me I need lima beans? Or
Hey! When we're on our spaceship and we're sitting back drinking Slurpees, that's the refrigerator you want, Daryl, because you don't want to have to go to the grocery store. You want it to be delivered by an Amazon drone right to your fridge.
Yeah,
the Whole Foods Amazon drone, but go right here.
I'd just be wearing my sweatpants day and night.
It's going to be like that little transformer bottle. Those legs will pop out of the little helicopter thing. It'll walk over and drop the gallon of milk in your fridge and then just fly off.
It's going to happen. But the other thing, too, is the implementation of the FAST Act. That's Fixing America's Surface Transportation Act. It was passed back in 2015. It was basically, I think, kind of an early infrastructure. Hey, we're going to get some roads fixed. We're going to repair the aging infrastructure, you know, after the bridges collapsed and everybody.
Mm-hmm. Oh, in Minnesota, that was a great one.
Everyone freaks out for 2 days and then it's like back to normal.
Yeah.
This was an attempt to try to be like, hey, let's pacify folks. Let's get them some funding. But then it's also in there is setting up regional hubs for testing and evaluation of rapid deployment of autonomous and automated vehicle technology.
Okay.
And I think that's going to go hand in hand with just let's just put these on the road and turn them loose. I know at one point there was out in the deserts of like New Mexico or Arizona, one of the two, I think Mercedes Daimler-Benz was testing some autonomous semi-trucks with full license to do it. Now there's a person inside it, so they jerk
the
wheel.
Kind of like the one who killed the person in Arizona a couple of years ago. He was sitting there, but after, I mean, anybody, I don't care if you're the best driver in the world, if you're Mario Andretti, after 5 minutes of a car driving itself around, you're probably going to lose focus. I'm sorry.
I lose focus on the way to work every day. But no, it's one of those things. It's equally terrifying as it is remarkable. And I think it's amazing people can do that. And sure, the rate of error. I mean, we all drive. We all drive next to other people and be like, how the heck has this guy got his license? Or how's she still on the road?
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is there are test mules that run on the interstate next to you and me every day.
Oh, yeah. I see them come into my shop with, and I'm like, where did this car come from? They have 200,000 miles on a car that's been driving across the country for the last year and a half with a driver in it.
Of course.
With CPUs all over the thing, sensors all over it. And if you're lucky enough, every once in a while you'll see a car like on the highway and you go, what is that? And it's probably an autonomous car.
Yeah, just racking up those test miles.
Yeah.
Because in a few years they're going to say, in the 6 million miles of real-world testing we've done, we only killed 20 people. No, I don't.
Well, that's still probably better than humans. The other day I was on the interstate.
It's true.
The day I was on the interstate, and I saw a guy just zip onto 155 in a motorcycle, no helmet, sunglasses with flip-flops and shorts and a t-shirt on. And it just reminded me like when you see the monkey smoking or like riding the circus. The circus attractions, we're just monkeys at heart, man. We're just
absolutely.
Like, give us some speed and a throttle and man.
Yeah.
A guy could have been half naked jumping on the seat like a chimpanzee. It would have been thrilled. So that scares me. And then I was behind an F-150 the other day and I'm watching that back axle just jump on the driver's side. And I said to my son, I said, that guy's got a wheel that's going to blow anytime here. Mm-hmm. He's doing 80 miles an hour down the interstate and he has to feel it. He's as unsafe as anybody else. I think the autonomous car is safer than that guy who doesn't maintain his vehicle.
Yeah, but think of all the technology that would have to go into every aspect of that vehicle. I was thinking about this the other day. I think the big push is going to be – a lot of people have been talking about this too. The big push would be to automate semi-trucks.
Yes.
Because for a multitude of reasons, mostly all boils down to money.
Yeah.
And, there's a computer that'll take a truck and it'll never have to have a brake, a DOT
yeah,
required brake.
Love's truck stops will lose money all over the country.
It will. But then what happens when, let's say you have a blowout? How is the computer going to react to that besides just hit the brakes and,
There'll be sensors. Stop. I mean, there'll be just like the tire pressure monitors we have now. Once it sees the deflation and it sees that calculation drop down, it'll either have some pre-programmed setting that'll know that it has to stop then, or if it knows it's an inside tire that lost a little bit of pressure, if it can go,
I guess.
There's going to be, it's going to have a logic.
I guess. I don't know. What about deer? What about a deer that runs out? just obliterate all wildlife? I don't know.
From what I've seen on the interstate around 474, I don't know that deer is stopping anybody.
Basically, we're going to drive around with cars that look like Doc Brown's helmet in the 1955 where he comes. He's got the...
Now, I was a little bit... Keith Crane, like I was saying, he's definitely been in the industry for a long time, and I kind of now am equating him to the Andy Rooney of automotive news. So if you ever watched 60 Minutes when you were a kid, and I say kid because he's been dead now for probably a decade.
Yeah,
but Andy Rooney was this crotchy old guy who he had the worst segment. It was a brilliant segment in one way because he got paid for it, but it was really a terrible segment because he'd just get on at the end of the show and, did you ever notice how paper clips are twisted a certain direction to the right, Why are they the right? Why aren't they the left? Of course, stupid stuff.
Right.
And, but he would get 5 or 7 minutes out of every show for that.
And there'd be people at home going like, yeah, I did notice that.
Yeah, dude, this guy's so great.
I can relate.
Anyway, I just feel like Keith Crane's turning into the Andy Rooney of the automotive news. I'm sure the other other columnists and journalists there are probably like every time he walks down the hall bitching about something, like, oh God, here he goes again. So, all right. So it was interesting also that Wired Magazine had an article, because I think I Googled this, talking about the autonomous vehicles being taken off the road after that accident. Was it Uber?
Yeah, I think it was an Uber.
Yeah. So Uber had taken all their cars off the road. They were autonomous, and I think they were still having, I don't know how they were doing this. They were doing something with the driver who was more in control, but the autonomous part was watching what the driver was doing. But since then, they have decided they're going to bring it back. And now you have autonomous cars back on the road. They've decided that they've done enough testing that that shouldn't happen again, I guess.
Were they the Pittsburgh, the test market?
Yes, the R&D center for Uber is in Pittsburgh, okay. Pennsylvania. So Uber is going to return to its self-driving cars on the roads of Pittsburgh. So if you're in Pittsburgh, watch yourself.
A lot of hills in Pittsburgh. I don't know. I might make sure those brakes are working. I don't know. We'll see what happens. There's too much money invested by people and companies that are bigger than anybody else out there. There's no way this isn't happening large scale.
Oh yeah.
I think they just gotta make their case and then have enough. Have enough miles logged in the books where they, you know, if they do get called into court someday, they can be like, well, you know, by like just what you said, we're doing.
That's still arguable that they're not any more unsafe than any other fool on the road. I just don't want to die by a machine, you know.
No, man.
Miscalculating something. I'd rather know it was that monkey on the motorcycle,
right?
Smoking the cigar.
Yeah, some guy plows into me going 85 with, you know, yeah, I'd feel much better about that than the liquid metal guy from Terminator 2.
Yeah, exactly. Although that would be cool. I didn't think we had any localish news, but you were. What do we got going on here, Daryl?
Oh, I just heard. I just through the grapevine. I know that there's some city road projects, big intersection overhauls, Allen and Willow Knowles, and a couple of highway projects too. They're trying to get things wrapped up before school because it's towards the end of summer.
Oh yeah,
and we're at that time now where everyone's thinking back to school, fall, and you know what? I would just love to see some road projects wrap up before snow because I don't like seeing half done road projects. And then, oh, we'll get back to this next year. Well, then freeze, thaw, everything's
so what do you think about this? We didn't talk about this. We usually do a pre-show, a warm-up, talk about all this stuff. But these guys work in third shift all the time. They got these lights going and everything. It's like that's all they're doing now is working third. So it's not inconveniencing us during the day. But I guarantee we're paying a premium for those guys working third shift.
Yeah, probably. I know up in the suburbs, a lot of stretches of 294 right by O'Hare, though they're working through the night, and I mean it's fantastic in some regards because traffic in some areas, yeah, I mean you try to do that anytime during a week, forget it. But at the same time, yeah, I'm sure the price goes up. I don't want to say that those little LED diffuser lights they're using now, which by the way looks like your seventh grade picture day. Have you seen those lights they use on the construction of the road at night?
Yeah,
it's like I don't know if it's to make sure you don't have the glare. So I don't know what it is.
Well, I kind of thought they were like the Coleman lanterns where they just had like a filament that was like, and they were dulling it down with those big cloths or whatever they're doing. So
could be. I don't know. It's definitely not as glaring, but at night coming up on them is kind of weird. And I don't think they give off as much light for the workers. So I don't know. We'll see.
Probably the new trend. I think from now on it's going to be these guys will be working, when they're doing their work during the summer months, they'll be working at night. The wife told me tonight that the roundabout got nuked up by Grand Prairie.
Well, there's one at Radnor and not 91. Radnor and Alta, and then Allen and Alta's got one. I don't know. I think they're putting one in.
So there's still a couple going.
Yeah, there's more than enough to go around.
Well, I can tell you the one in East Peoria that I go through. Believe me, I was just in Scotland, two or three months ago. I hit more than my share of roundabouts from the wrong direction. I hit the double roundabouts that were shaped like an oval. Those are a nightmare, let me tell you, because people will get really pissed on those if you stop. Even just flinch for a second, you're getting honked at.
They lay on the horn.
Yeah, but the one in East Peoria, people stop at it. People go around it. I sometimes, when there's nobody there, I'll drive around it two or three times just for fun.
Just because?
I haven't really tried to hit too much speed because there's a lot of I think there's a cop shop just right down the road from that spot. But,
yeah, they're not far.
But no, but most people don't know how to drive to those things. So I think I like them. I think there's a lot of value to them. I just don't know that Americans know how to drive in these things. So.
No, they don't. I get into arguments with my dad. My dad loves the roundabout. He thinks it's the greatest invention. But I think here in the States, yeah, we're, I mean, put a light. Mm-hmm. I think for me, I think the whole concept of the roundabout here in the States is that's if you take all the traffic control fixtures out, that's one less thing for us to maintain.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's all that that is.
Well, I think on a rural road or something like that, I think that's where you do it.
Yeah.
I don't think you need to have it in the middle of town or something like that, especially when you still have stoplights and you have tons of traffic. It's probably defeating itself. So
yeah, great.
You're not saving any electricity. All right. So question of the week. It wasn't really a question. It was more, have you watched this video? There was a video that made its rounds on viral video. The company's called Motherboard. And there was a video on Dr. Frankenstein. His name is Rich. He has a YouTube channel called Rich Rebuilds. He's from Rochester, New Hampshire, I believe. And he basically is taking Teslas from junkyards and from salvage yards, and he's trying to rebuild them. And he's trying to collect a catalog of parts so he can, you know, fix people's cars outside of Tesla's warranty coverage if needed. And I don't know how successful he is. I don't know if he's making any money at it. But it did bring to light a few questions about who actually owns your car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you basically purchase a vehicle, but you don't own the rights to all of the software and some of the proprietary hardware that's in it. And so what happens is you get guys like this who start to run a business on the side, and they're like, hey, I'm going to fix these Teslas up. And pretty soon an attorney with a briefcase is going to come to your house and give you a little cease and desist order to say you don't have the right to do that. Well, last I checked, if you bought something, even if it is at an insurance auction or on eBay or your neighbor's backyard, that's yours, man. I don't understand how someone after the fact, after the car's been bought and sold at the dealership, after things have been paid off, I don't understand how they have any say whatsoever what happens to it after that.
Yeah, it makes you believe that that car has to be run on a wire from the manufacturer all the time. And if it can't communicate with the manufacturer, then to them, they cut it off. He ran into situations on there where he wanted a recall done, and they tried to refuse a recall, which is a blatant against, I mean, we looked up the FAST Act, stuff like that. We should have been looking up whatever act that was. Manufacturers are required by law to give the ability to work on their car to the customers, you know, so you don't have to go to the dealership. You know, what if you live in the middle of Wyoming where there's no Tesla dealership and you need to do something?
Right.
You should have the ability to service that car yourself. And Tesla just was blatantly denying this guy the coverage. Now, once he pressed, they did the recall, and they did a recall for somebody else he knew. But it's really interesting to me that there's not some serious scrutiny going on.
Well, and you're in the business too, so you understand what it's like to, you know, you probably get folks that'll come in all the time, well, I can fix this myself. Why do I got to pay this? It's like, because A, I'll get you the better parts. Mm-hmm. I'll make sure I get a trained technician to fix it. You know, so I do understand that. But when you're talking about technology that in some way, shape, or form, and this guy, if you watch his channel, he's fascinating. He's like one part hoarder and one part like
definitely
MIT.
He could be on Hoarders for sure. He might die under a pile of Tesla batteries by the time it's all over.
Yeah, it might be some high voltage stuff going on. But he also seems like he knows his stuff. And I don't know if he comes from a computer or an IT or electrical engineering background. You have to know your stuff when you're working on these things. But at the same time, there's a lot of components in this car. This car is, I mean, we watched the video again upstairs. Mm-hmm. The motor and transaxle is a pretty small piece.
Yeah.
And it's all modulars, all components. So, you know, why not salvage the stuff? Keep it out of a landfill. If you're able to take a car that's been wrecked or flooded and there's some parts of it that can be put on another vehicle instead of going directly to Tesla, why not let people be able to buy it?
And this is interesting, too, because I don't understand why Tesla doesn't have a program that they're going after these cars.
Mm.
You know, other manufacturers that make electric cars or hybrid cars have buyback programs for the hybrid components of them. And I would think Tesla, knowing the value of that battery pack and just the heavy metals and everything else that's in there, they have a vested interest to get that thing out of the junkyard. I mean, if you look up, there's a website where you can buy these spare parts before I even knew about this guy. And a Tesla replacement battery on the aftermarket, it's $40,000.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Is there just one?
No, it was a series. Yeah, but they're all remanufactured, all tested, and guaranteed to work in your car. For a Tesla, I think a Model X or something like that is what I saw.
Wow.
40 grand.
And we all know having phones and having any other rechargeable items in our household, those batteries, they're not forever, folks. So you're going to have a vehicle that is going to require something that's going to need a little bit of maintenance. How long, speaking of other manufacturers, how long are like Prius batteries warranted?
Guaranteed for 8 years or 100,000 miles. My personal experience is about 180,000, 200,000 miles they go out.
Okay.
About 10 years, 180,000, 200,000 miles. I had 220 out of my first Prius.
Were they lithium ion?
No, it was regular, just
nickel metal or NiCad or.
Yeah, the new version I have is a lithium. And I'm actually scared to see if that one will last 200,000 miles. And I think it's potentially going to be a lot more expensive if it goes out. So we'll see. Wife might switch to a Corolla in the next car if that happens.
That one you were talking about.
No, I doubt that.
That will not happen.
Yeah. So I did want to give a shout out to a friend of mine, who Kevin. He works for a Tesla dealership. I'm not going to say more than that because I don't want him definitely getting identified. But he posted a picture to me last week saying, "Hey, listen to episode 2. And I never heard a response. And as I was thinking about this, I'm like, "Oh God, we probably got to the Elon Musk moment, and he probably slammed it down.
Shut it off.
Yeah. You know, we're not going to do the Elon Musk moment this week because we had enough stuff to talk about. But it is definitely obvious on our show that the electric market and the autonomous stuff is going to be a constant source of conversation and news. Yeah. It's not going away. We're not going to be talking about carburetors on this show. We're going to be talking about new technology a lot.
Yep. And speaking of new technology, I saw something that was quasi-frightening. Ford apparently is installing exoskeleton vests on some of their employees. I say installing.
I mean, I wanted to look up pictures of this. I didn't get a chance for the show.
What was that Tom Cruise movie?
Edge of Tomorrow, Live, Die, Repeat, and where they like bolted on the suit and ran around.
Yeah, and instead of like lasers and rifles or whatever fighting aliens, Ford is using these on their employees to help them at their assembly process and actually kind of lighten the load, make sure their posture is good. It's like a back brace.
Okay.
You know, the guys that work in like a loading dock, like I used to, you put the back brace on, but this also has like little, like bionic man kind of arm stuff. And they say it adds about a 15% extra assist to the human being. So they're using those actually right now at their Flat Rock plant where they make the Mustangs, and they're going to kind of do some
interesting
studies on that, see how it works. Boeing, I guess, is using them. So pretty neat stuff, but also frightening to see like, Terminator.
Well, I guess at least they're still keeping the man in the job. You know, that's the bonus there.
Well, it's some of that stuff's pretty precise, I guess. If they could have a machine do it all, they would. They probably will someday. But for now,
we'll keep people involved.
That's right.
Yeah, that was nice of them.
Plug into the Matrix.
All right. So it's our favorite segment of the show. I mean, personally, for me, this is the one where we really get to talk about the stuff that we geek out on, and this is a car show, so we get to talk about geeky car stuff. Have I gone first the last couple of weeks, or
does it matter? It doesn't matter. These actually, it's a tie in cars and movies, which both of us
and we've done this a couple times now. Like, yeah. So all right, so I was watching Bring a Trailer last week, and it was a Jaguar 1965 S Type, and it's a 4-door. Sedan. It's nothing dramatic to look at, but I instantly recognized it because there was a movie that came out a couple years ago. It was called Dan Begin Again. It's a Mark Ruffalo piece where he's like a washed up agent. He finds some talent or something, and he's helping some young kid. And blah blah. But anyway, it takes place in maybe New York City, and he's constantly driving this rundown X Type. Not quite the same car. The body looks very similar, but it's dull paint. It's scratched. It's a really impractical car to be driving around town. Every time he comes to a stop, the body shudders and you see the rocking of the springs and all that stuff. But I was enamored with this car. Every time we get on the screen, I was just like, oh man, there it is again. And I probably should have just paused it. And I probably should have drawn a little sketch of it. Cause I think I was a little bit in love with the car. Yeah, let me just do a little doodle of you. I love the fact, first off, that this old car was his daily driver. There was no illusion that this was just something he was driving to be fancy. This was a car he drove every day, and I fell in love with it. And I think it was funny to me that I don't remember the movie one bit, but
yeah.
I remember this car. And then it happened to me again on another movie. I don't know why I fall in these movies on Netflix. It was this Ed Harris movie with Annette Bening and. Ed Harris is Annette Bening's husband. He dies, and she's really sad. And then she runs into a guy who looks just like him, and then she starts getting creepy stalkerish. Well, he's driving a Toyota FJ62, through probably half the movie, and it's a gorgeous model. You can you can tell it's been redone. Of course, that just tells you how cool of a hipster guy this is. You know, he's driving a Toyota FJ62 because that's not practical either as a daily driver. But I just kept looking at that truck all the time, and God knows what the storyline was going, you know. And 10 years from now, I'm not going to remember anything about these movies other than Ed Harris was driving a Toyota FJ62 and Mark Ruffalo was driving a Jaguar X-Type. But it's just funny to me. So I watched this car. It went for $22,000. I don't know a whole lot about these. I think I'm becoming more interested in older British cars like that from doing this show.
Don't do it.
Okay, all right. But I'm interested in it. There's something beautiful about the lines in that car. And yeah. The American cars didn't have anything like that in the 60s. And even the Japanese Asian cars, maybe they had a little bit, but they certainly didn't have that size and mass. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty car. So I'm enamored.
Well, and pretty ahead of its time as far as having an independent rear suspension. You got the dual overhead cam. Yep. I think probably a 3.8 or 3.4, whatever their 6 was at the time. Mm-hmm. Great exhaust note. Great handling car. They're actually very competitive, even as kind of weekend enthusiast cars here in the States went. I've got some old Jaguar and MG ads where they talk about it could be like a weekend, you know, sports car, mm-hmm. and, you know, go to the market with the family, you know, on Monday or something. So really beautiful car. And I think that at that point they were still actual real leather, real like walnut.
Oh, probably wood real trim. Wood. Yeah, I believe that.
Yeah. Yeah, just a gorgeous, well-built car. What would you say, 22?
It went for 22, yeah. And I mean, bring a trailer is going to be top of line premium. The car, like Ruffalo had, you know, being as rough as it was, I mean, maybe it's a $10,000 car. You know, who knows?
Yeah. Yeah, if you get your hands on that, go for it. But you're going to
hate life later, is what you're saying?
You're going to have a lot of fun trying to find parts.
Help me with some brakes, Daryl.
Sure, yeah. I got some extra pieces in the garage. All right, so this week, this is a weird tangential relationship to Annette Bening. Eric's talking about one of the movies he was watching had her in it. I recently watched on Netflix Bugsy, the Warren Beatty.
Warren Beatty.
Annette Bening vehicle there where they're doing the biopic of Ben Siegel. Went by Bugsy.
Bugsy Siegel. Yeah,
the guy who started the Flamingo out in Las Vegas. And I love those Hollywood films or timepieces. He lives in Hollywood or something like that, or Beverly Hills in mm-hmm. the 40s for a bit while he's setting up his casino empire out in the desert. And I love movies like Chinatown or Mulholland Falls or L.A. Confidential.
Oh, my God. Mulholland Falls is so good.
It's great stuff.
Yeah.
And actually, Nick Nolte, I think, drives one of these.
Nick Nolte gets a lot of play on this show.
He does. He's a great actor. Was a great actor. The car I found this week is the perfect 40s Hollywood cruiser or gangster mobile. It's a 41 Cadillac Series 62 convertible sedan. It's a big four-door convertible.
Big is not the word. I think a blue whale washed up in Japan this last week, and I don't think it was as big as this thing.
This thing is a monstrosity. It's basically, you know, so everyone thinks like the big Lincoln Continental with the suicide doors, mm-hmm. kind of like the Entourage car. Everyone thinks that was like the first four-door convertible. Now, like convertible sedans were a thing into the, you know, way back in the day, kind of an evolution of the touring sedan. But the they carried into the 40s in some makes, including Buick, these guys here, Cadillac, and they were just, you could fit 9 people with their hats and their suits and, you know, whatever else they were carrying.
5 people across that front seat probably,
oh,
right?
Oh, man, huge. This thing is on eBay. It's also in a private collection for sale in Arizona right now for $88,900. You can buy it. It was restored about 15 years ago. Beautiful, kind of a midnight blue with a white top and red Connelly leather seats. Flathead V8 with a 3-speed manual trans. A lot of those came out with the Hydromatic. Cadillac was one of the early adopters of the Hydromatic, which be great, but as a 3-speed manual, I think it'd be a lot more fun, especially going through the mountains.
So much chrome, so much beautiful chrome on that thing.
Yeah, love it.
That grill is massive. It's as big as this table.
Yeah, I need to find the curb weight. It's probably about almost 6,000 pounds, I bet you.
And I love the red rims with the white tires. Look great, too.
Yeah, big white walls. I love it. A lot of style. Look good parked next to a Hollywood bungalow or something.
Now, you said there's a website for us car geeks and Hollywood.
Yeah.
Do you remember what that was?
It is the Internet Movie Car Database, much like IMDb for just regular movies.
This is Daryl, because I knew nothing of this until tonight, so I give you credit on this.
Yeah, if you want to find out, like, what type of car, you know, what type of van they drove in the A team.
Yeah.
You just go to imcdb.org and you can search by the show or you can search by a vehicle.
I'll put a link to it in the on the blog.
Perfect. Yeah. It's great. If you ever want to find out if anyone used a Dodge Omni in a major motion picture, they'll have screenshots of every Omni that was there. I mean, it's just goofy. You can spend hours on that thing. Yeah. It's great.
Hilarious. All right, so and I'm also going to probably put a link to that video of the what's his name again? Dr. Frankenstein Rich Rebuilds on YouTube.
Fascinating video.
Yeah, it really, really, really explores some questions I don't think enough people are asking. So
we should also put a link to that Frankenstein Honda that the guy did a Tesla drivetrain swap on.
Oh.
We can talk about that next time.
All right, we can do that. All right. Well, I think we're coming to the end of another episode of Throwing Wrenches, the Reliant Robin version. Or are we...
Yeah, the Polaris slingshot three-wheeler. It's been a pleasure having you guys here, and thanks for listening to the show. Please keep in touch. Let us know how we're doing, and we'll definitely make sure to try to keep the show fresh, fun, and family-friendly.
I'm sorry about the swear word earlier. Okay.
No, all right. Fine.
Thanks, Daryl. Thanks for ditching on me there.
Yeah, you're welcome.
All right. So we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye, folks.